You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
John McCain's life is a story of service above self. 40 years ago, in an enemy prison camp, Lieutenant Commander McCain was offered release ahead of others who had been held longer. His wounds were so severe that anyone would have understood if he'd accepted. John refused. For that selfless decision, he suffered nearly 5 more years of beatings and isolation. When he was released, his arms had been broken, but not his honor. Fellow citizens, if the Hanoi Hilton could not break John McCain's resolve to do what is best for his country, you can be sure the angry left never will.
Last night, President George W. Bush praised John McCain, but in 2000, the two were locked in a bitter campaign for the Republican nomination. Well, how is that playing out in this campaign as President Bush is passing the mantle to nominee McCain? Joining me now to discuss the complex relationship between the two men is Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time magazine. I'm very pleased to welcome her to the show today. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm okay. They've been called frenemies. Is that how you describe their relationship?
That certainly has been in the past. But, you know, there is a very long and rich history, I think, of people picking people and forming alliances that, you know, would have seemed inconceivable just even a few months before, much less years before. And I think, you know, John McCain and George Bush sort of made their peace in the 2004 campaign, where McCain went out and campaigned quite enthusiastically for the president.
Well, at the same time, over the last 8 years, McCain and Bush have disagreed over campaign finance, tax cuts, health care, judicial nominees, the environment, the use of torture, Guantanamo Bay, the way that the Hurricane Katrina disaster was handled. Did that enhance Senator McCain's reputation of being a maverick, but also cause trouble with the White House?
Well, I think we are going to hear a lot about these disagreements in the weeks that remain in the campaign because, of course, President Bush is just enormously unpopular out in the country, and specifically with those swing voters that McCain needs to win. And I think, you know, as important as anything the president had to say last night was the stagecraft. He was not doing it on the stage here in St. Paul, where he was doing it at a distance by video. You know, Laura Bush, who is still quite popular throughout the country, has been here in person and it has been very much of a presence.
Hasn't John McCain moved his position closer to the president's on a number of the issues that I mentioned? Does that give the Democrats a chance to describe him as more Bush? Because last week, the Democrats tried to make the case that electing Senator McCain would be the equivalent of a third Bush term.
Well, certainly that is the case that you're going to hear them making. That's the Democratic case throughout the rest of the campaign. You know, starting with that very memorable line of Hillary Clinton's in her speech last week, where she said it's appropriate that they are holding this convention in the Twin Cities because it's impossible to tell John McCain and George Bush apart.
Well, John McCain was an early supporter of the surge, and I guess the war is one of the areas of total agreement between them.
John McCain would say he supported the surge before George Bush supported the surge.
In fact, the Washington Times reported last month that McCain was the one who persuaded Bush to consider the surge strategy back in 2006, which came as a surprise to people who thought that they were not all that friendly. How did he get the ear of the president on the war?
Well, I think that there were, you know, Senator McCain was advocating it, as were a number of important military officials, and it really was a question, I think, as much as anything, of having to persuade the Pentagon, which believed that, you know, the military was already overstretched. So, you know, I think that John McCain's early support of the war, the fact that he was out vigorously defending the decision to invade Iraq, gave him a lot of credibility with the Bush White House when it came to, you know, how to run the war. I mean, and the other thing, by the way, is that he was a relatively early critic of how Don Rumsfeld was running the war. And of course, you know, one of the first things Bush did after getting reelected president was throwing Rumsfeld overboard.
How much of the bitterness of the 2000 campaign lingers in the relationship between these two men? Because the attacks during the South Carolina primary campaign were very personal and aimed at McCain's family.
You know, I would say that in any way that matters, that bitterness is really gone. Not only, you know, are they political allies now, but John McCain has actually hired to work on his campaign a number of the people who were working on the Bush campaign then and coming up with that strategy to attack him.
Karl Rove disciples. So all is forgiven?
Well, I think what happens in politics is that people look at each other, and you know, when you see something that is of mutual advantage, you will go for it. I think this is a pretty old and much to be expected story in politics.
After the 2000 campaign, wasn't John McCain being encouraged to leave the Republican Party? Do you think he ever seriously considered it the way Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he did?
You hear all kinds of stories about that. Tom Daschle, who had several conversations with John McCain, said that he was very seriously considering it. I don't think this encouragement was coming from within the Republican Party, however, because you might remember that after that election, you know, we had a 50-50 Senate, so they definitely needed John McCain voting with them.
When did the Bush-McCain relationship begin to improve? Was the decision of Jim Jeffords in 2001 to become an independent pivotal?
Well, I think that there came a moment before the 2004 election where John Weaver, who had been McCain's chief strategist, sat down with Karl Rove, who had been Bush's chief strategist. Now, mind you, these people were two people who were not only at odds over this campaign, but way back in history, they had been business partners who had a very, very nasty falling out and were essentially sworn enemies. And I think that the sort of, the truce between the two political organizations kind of traces itself to that moment. And, you know, that is the moment at which John McCain agrees to get on board the Bush reelection effort and campaign quite vigorously for him in 2004. And I think that was where he really earned his bona fides with the Republican Party again.
Do you think McCain is already looking forward to 2008 and the possibility of another run?
I think it is without a doubt that was the case. And again, that goes back to my point about, you know, politicians tend to make these decisions on the basis of mutual benefit.
Still, there are some real odd things that have happened. When President Bush gave his formal endorsement of McCain at the White House in March, didn't the McCains arrive late?
Yeah, and, you know, this was not exactly, I mean, this is a, you know, photo op that mattered more to the base, I think, and was actually had a downside beyond that. And, you know, there have been some other odd moments, too. I mean, going back early in the Bush administration, when campaign finance reform passed, it was interesting that President Bush decided not to have a real signing ceremony of the bill because he didn't want John McCain to have that moment in the sun. So, you know, there are little things like that, but it is not unusual for somebody to be running late in politics.
Well, Al Gore didn't ask Bill Clinton to campaign heavily for him when he made his run for the presidency. Now I think he regrets it. What can we expect here? President Bush has said that he'd campaign as much as McCain asked him to.
Well, first of all, I think the Gore team still believes and will still assert that they don't think that Bill Clinton being with them was a overall plus because of, you know, the memories it brought up of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. But I think that where you're going to see President Bush working for John McCain in the fall is on fundraising and with the base, which means you're not going to see him at a lot of public events. You're not going to see him out stumping for John McCain because that is something that would hurt more than it would help. But he still can bring in a lot of money, and he still can help, you know, mobilize volunteers on the grassroots level, and I think that that is where he's going to be putting his efforts. And he will continue probably to, we will see key members of the Bush team going to work for the McCain campaign. In fact, it's a White House speechwriter today who is sitting there and writing the speech for Sarah Palin and helping prep her for it.
Now, the Sarah Palin thing is working out rather interestingly because it was intended, I guess, to make the social conservatives of the party happier. And we are getting this odd situation. According to newspaper reports, most social conservatives don't seem to be upset by the news that her 17-year-old daughter, who's not married, is pregnant, even though her mother has pushed for abstention-only classes in sex education in Alaska's high schools. I guess she didn't attend some of those classes.
I think the social conservative base is absolutely thrilled with this appointment, and I think, I mean, with this pick as a running mate, and I think that, you know, this is something that is giving some of them pause, but I think at this point it has actually brought people on board, influential social conservatives who had been sort of leery of John McCain, people like James Dobson, who now says, before he said he wouldn't vote for John McCain, now he says he will, and he says if flip-flopping is a sin, then I'm a sinner.
McCain has also taken some swipes at President Bush. He had an ad running recently that said, "We're worse off than we were 4 years ago." Is that part of the distance that McCain needs to create between him and Bush?
Oh, absolutely, and especially on the economy, which suddenly is looming as, not suddenly, but over the past few months, has begun to loom as the overwhelming issue in this election. It is, you know, Senator McCain is also having to distance himself from some of his own previous statements about the economy being fundamentally strong. I think the thing to really watch here is the women's vote, and particularly the vote of these kind of moderate and not particularly partisan women. These are really the voters who put George Bush over the top in 2004. Back then, we were calling them security moms. This year, they are absolutely overwhelmed by their concerns and their insecurities involving the economy. And the subsequent, you know, the relevant issues to that are things like health care. And so John McCain knows he needs those voters. Sarah Palin was an attempt to reach out to those voters in hopes that even if they don't agree with her on the issues, they will somehow relate to her life story in all of its, you know, modern complexity. And, you know, he's also got to show that he is on the ball and understands what's going on with the economy.
In speaking to the delegates at this convention, how do you think Republicans feel about President Bush these days?
You know, I think that a lot of them are sort of, while they continue to support him personally, I mean, they understand that his performance in office has gotten them into a world of trouble, not just, you know, in the presidential election, but when you look up and down the ballot. I mean, it looks like they are going to take some really big losses in the House and Senate races this fall, too. So they understand that whatever their personal affection for him, that he has helped create some serious problems for the party up and down the ballot.
Several senators who were in close reelection campaigns chose to skip the convention altogether. Is the Republican brand that damaging in some close races like, Kansas's Senator Pat Roberts didn't go to St. Paul?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, these are senators who are essentially having to run away from their party affiliation, and this has been very much the case. The other reason they don't, you know, they are not showing up here is that, you know, it's as your constituents back home are worried about their own, you know, problems, their own health care, their own gas prices, you know, it's not a great thing to be seen on TV cavorting at convention parties with your, you know, fellow party brethren.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Karen Tumulty is the national political correspondent for Time magazine.
Thanks a lot.